Hey guys, have you heard of Goldbelly? It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants across the country, anywhere, nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. Goldbelly ships Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. So, if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's goldbelly.com, promo code GIFT.
This podcast is part of the BombPod Media Network.
A fun ride, follow along, watch as we slide. Paranormal just hit the lights, goosebumps all through the night. Mix in just a little bit of twain, that girl sure can't do a thing. Together hillbillies go insane, laugh so hard it'll hurt your brain. Podcast you won't ever change, these two here, they got the recipe. Sat on back and listen in to some of our darkest mysteries, eh?
Welcome to Hillbilly Horror Stories. And now here's your host, Jerry and Tracy Pauly. And their dog Ninja.
See the curtains hanging in the window in the evening on a Friday night. Little light is shining through the window, let me know everything's alright.
Summer breeze makes me feel fine, blowing through the jasmine in my mind.
Alright, welcome everybody to episode 75 of Hillbilly Horror Stories.
75. Almost there.
To what?
100.
You'll have to excuse Ninja in the background tonight. He is nasally. I think he has a cold or something.
Yeah, so he sure does.
He's very loud. The song that we had on there was Summer Breeze.
Summer Breeze.
Okay.
Makes me feel fine.
We're doing Summer Wind, and I didn't know of a song called Summer Wind, but for some reason, Summer Breeze just hit me, and I stuck with it all week.
A breeze, that's what I was going to do.
Who cares? So it's just a little more stormy than one night. You know, who cares? So this is going to be a really fun show. We have a lot of people that's been asking us to do Summer Wind, and I was holding off because there is a pretty well-known author out there that is an expert on Summer Wind, and I've been trying to set up him to come on the show and talk a little bit about it, and that's what's been the hold up. He's a very popular young man, and we finally got a hold of him, thus the Summer Wind episode
this week. Great. That worked out good. Worth the wait.
Yeah, Craig Nearing is the gentleman. You've probably heard him on some other shows talking about Summer Wind, and he's a fun guy to talk to, and we talk about a bunch of events going on, especially out in Iowa. There's an event that he's going to invite you guys out to,
which
is pretty darn cool. As usual, we're going to thank all of our military and your military, whatever country they might be supporting, for everything that they do. Thank you guys so much.
Yes, thank you. God bless each and every one of you.
And when we say guys, we mean guys and gals.
And gals. We appreciate you ladies just as much.
Unless you're, over in Saudi Arabia, where I'm sure they don't allow women in the military.
They probably don't. I'm not sure.
Or on the streets driving. Which, I'm not against that, because I think insurance rates would probably be a lot better.
Well, if you know women, you have a lot of women listeners that are about to punch in your face, right?
I know this, right? I know a couple, specifically.
Yeah.
Okay, so obviously we would jump on our iTunes reviews real quick because you guys came out in strong force last week.
We had a couple of weeks
over the holidays where it was a little lower than normal, and I think now it's getting back to a little closer to what it was. We got On One, Java Woman, Big Blue, 1065, Boss DGM, that's a cool name.
Mm-hmm.
Priscilla, thank you, dear. Kimmy, N. Marshall, Annabelle, and Jay Joslin. I know who that is.
Janice?
No, Not West Joplin.
Joplin. Oh, crap.
It's John. Remember, he was on our listeners episode.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Thank and you guys for the reviews. We appreciate it.
Yep, they were awesome.
Got an upgrade on one. I'm very happy about that. Yep. So thank you guys again.
Patreon, we actually had new listeners. We got Jennifer DeLeon.
Oh, I like that.
It's kind of French. I probably said it completely wrong. It's probably like DeLeon or something. No. It's completely wrong. Jennifer can let us know. Lily Rios, she's one of my little favorites. She's been listening to the show as long as we've had a Facebook page.
Oh, great. Thanks,
and so
honey.
She jumped in there. Leslie Greenwood, Kate Crew, Tim Mays. Tim was excited enough where he called me to let me know that he did it on my way to work the other day, and we talked for probably 30 minutes.
Oh, that's great.
And then Leslie Tyler. So
awesome. Thank you, guys. We appreciate you so
you
much.
You guys are the shizit.
The shizit.
We had just finished up an interview a little bit ago that it'd be on next week's show with CK. His name's actually Kevin May from Mirths and Monsters.
Ooh.
And that was fun. So you guys, if you listen to And That's Why We Drink, you probably know who he is, even if you haven't listened to his show, because he's made an appearance too on there. On that's how he kind of got started doing a podcast, was through their encouragement.
Good.
And we talk a little bit about that, but that'll be on next week's episode. But it's a fun show, Mirths and Monsters. Check it out. It's a very family-friendly show, no questionable material whatsoever in it. So if you've got a 9, 10, 11-year-old, 12-year-old that's into, like, fantasy-type stuff, myth stuff, lore, it's a perfect show to listen to.
Perfect. Sorry.
The other thing I want to touch on before we get into our story is last week's sound quality was absolute crap.
Ooh,
and we apologize.
Crap. It was crap.
So let me tell you what happens. As you know, this whole podcasting thing is not the easiest thing to do sometimes when from the technical side, from my end, because I'm not the most technical person. And apparently what happened was I've learned that if I put on my headphones and there's a hum, that I can catch that, so we can eliminate that problem. What I haven't exactly learned is that if the cord that plugs, the USB cord that plugs into the computer, is not completely in, I can hear myself through the headphones fine, but it's not recording with our microphones. So what actually happened last week, to make a long story short, is we were using our fancy microphone system, but it actually recorded the whole show on the regular microphone just on the computer. It did not use our mics at all.
Yeah, we apologize because it was really not good.
And so we thought everything sounded good, and in our ears, it did sound good. But unfortunately, in your ears, it did not sound good. And we'll see about, I've got a little double check, triple check plan in place now to where we make sure everything's good before we get started. So,
sorry, guys.
Yeah. It sucks because it was a really good episode and the sound quality just made it where some people probably just turned it off.
Yeah.
So, anyways.
I turned it off.
Yep, she did.
I was like, oh my gosh, yikes.
We went to an event right after we put the show up and we listened to it on the way up. And as we started listening, it was like, oh my God, this is horrible.
Yeah.
So
we didn't have time to change it and we were really sorry. You deserve better than that.
Right. And I blame Tracy 100% because she doesn't know how to stay in her seat. And I'll guarantee she knocked that wire loose when she walked over on the other side of the bed. But wow. I'm not pointing fingers.
Wow.
Okay. Let's get on to Summer Wind.
You better go to Summer Wind. You're asking for it tonight.
Summer Wind was actually formerly known as Lamont Mansion, and it's on West Bay Lake, which is the northeast part of Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
Very close to the Michigan border. So I think actually some of the lake is in Michigan side, and the other part of the lake is on the Wisconsin side. It was built in the early 1900s and used as a fishing lodge.
Okay, cool.
Yep, you could actually go and spend a night there for as little as $10 a night.
No way.
How about that for a bargain?
That is a bargain.
And that was probably really expensive back then
in the day,
for what this was. In 1916, Robert Patterson Lamont actually bought the home, and he turned it into a summer home for him and his wife. He was actually, eventually, during the time that he lived there, he became the U.S. Secretary of Commerce. So he was a pretty pretty well-known politician. He completely renovated the cabin, and he used some Chicago architects by the name of Talmadge and Watson. And it took about 2 years to get it completely remodeled. And that was about the time they moved in.
Wouldn't you love to have that? Wouldn't you love to have like a summer home like that?
I'd be happy just to have this home in the summer.
What do you mean? We do have this home in the summer.
Right. And I'm happy for what I have.
Oh, but it would be nice to have like a little getaway place to go to.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'd definitely love to have a place just when it's like freezing cold right now and snow on the ground to be able to leave to. So the property was actually rumored to be haunted before anybody ever had a chance to live in it. There was lots of Native American battles with the British settlers that had just moved up that way. There was also rumored that it's a Native American burial ground that was all around this property. So it wasn't a good place to build something to begin with. So the Lamont family owned the property for approximately 15 years, and they had a lot of paranormal experiences during that time. So shortly after moving into the Lamont Mansion, of course, I don't think they called it the Lamont Mansion. They just probably just called it their home.
Yeah.
But shortly after moving in, the maid actually told Mr. Lamont that she thought the house was haunted, but he didn't believe that because he said that the building was too new. He didn't think it could be haunted.
Oh.
So I guess that makes sense, unless the land was already haunted because of all the Indian burial ground and all the stuff going on.
Yeah, he probably didn't even think of that.
His whole opinion of that changed, though, in the early 1930s when he had a little incident that kind of shook him so bad that him and his wife and family just abandoned the property.
Oh, dang.
Like, instantly. They just grabbed their stuff and was gone.
Wow, I can't wait to hear this.
Legend says that one night him and his wife were actually sitting eating dessert in the kitchen. And there's a basement door in his kitchen. The door started shaking real bad, and then it just kind of opened up, slowly opened up. And when the door opened up, there was an apparition of a man. And Lamont stared at the ghost, and he said that the ghost stared at him. And then he pulled out a pistol, and the ghost kind of slammed the door shut. Slammed the door shut. But by that time, Lamont had fired two shots from his gun, which landed into the door.
Okay, but I don't know how he thinks he's going to shoot a ghost.
Well, maybe he's instinct. He probably wouldn't think he was going to see a ghost, so.
Well, yeah, I guess that's true.
So him and his wife fled, and that was it. Now, it is kind of important to note, and we'll get into this with Craig a little bit, there are a bunch of different stories about what happened. Everything is exactly the same, most of the stories, but a big majority of the stories say that it was an apparition of a man.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's another bunch of accounts that say that it was a woman in a white dress with black hair.
Oh.
So there's two different versions of what apparition he's seen. It all is him, same thing with him being in the kitchen and with the door opening and him shooting two shots. So just thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, it is.
Now, Mr. Lamont actually died in 1948. They didn't live in the property or go there for summers or anything after this happened. So they had the place another 13 or, 15 years.
Oh, and they just never went to it?
And just didn't go back to it. So
why didn't he try to sell it, I wonder?
Well, I don't know. But they did end up selling it in 1948. The bullet holes were still in
Wow.
Yeah. And they were there for years to be seen, after current and the newer owners throughout, the bullet holes were always there. But it sat empty, even though it was sold in 1948, it sat empty until the 70s. The people who bought it in 1948 was, the last names were Kefford. I'm probably pronouncing that wrong. But Mrs. Kefford did not like being in there. She got a funny feeling, so they never moved in. She bought it, I guess, as an investment. And she tried to sell it several times during the 60s. And every time somebody would buy it, it was like a contract for deed. But every time somebody would buy it, they never could keep the payments up or make the payments. So she ended up getting it back.
Oh, man. That's a nightmare.
Yeah. But then in the 70s, Arnold and Ginger Henshaw actually bought Summerwind. And they started renovating it into, I guess, what they would say was their dream coat. Mm-hmm. Their dream home. That was what they wanted. And unfortunately, the paranormal turned their dream home into a nightmare. Arnold and Ginger actually had six kids, and they moved in the early part of the 70s and moved out a whole 6 months later.
Oh, that must have been some crazy stuff going on to do that.
That 6 months was very eventful, to say the least. So strange things started from the very first day that they actually moved into the property. They might not have been people living there, but there obviously was something still there because this place didn't seem like it was vacant by any means.
Oh,
if you get my drift.
Yeah.
The Henshaws and their children started seeing shapes and shadows in the hallways. They could hear voices and moans and groans that were in the dark, empty rooms. So there was a bunch of rooms where they didn't go into because it was a pretty big house. And they could hear voices and stuff in there. When they would walk into the room to kind of check it out, it would just stop. They would I would even hear music and stuff like that coming.
So they actually did go into the room.
Oh, yeah. They would walk into a room, and anything they were hearing, whether it be the music or moans, groans, all that stuff, just stop.
Isn't that sad?
Yep.
That's so sad.
Why is that sad?
I mean, because the ghosts are, like, moaning and groaning, just like they're in agony and, like, ooh. You know what I'm saying?
You did that wailing thing last week.
I didn't mean to. No, I didn't mean to, but you know what I'm saying? It's just, I think it's sad that they're just stuck there.
One of the particular entities that they would actually see, and this is going to be kind of a common theme, was a woman who floated back and forth past some French doors that were leading into the dining room, but she had long black hair and a white dress.
Mm-hmm.
And see, that's where it fits kind of in with what Lamont supposedly saw. So there's a couple of different, like I said, whether he saw the man or whether he saw this, they claim that they saw a woman with black hair and a white dress, and that's going to come into play a little more a little later into the story. The first instinct, obviously, is where they were there just imagining things. Because it's a new house to you. It's kind of an older house. It's creaks and stuff. That's when the house is settled. Everybody would think that. But it soon became pretty obvious that that was not the case. They had several appliances and a hot water heater and a water pump that would just stop working for no reason whatsoever and then just start miraculously working again the next day before they could even call somebody out to look at it.
Well, I mean, at least it started working before they called somebody, because that would piss me off.
Right. Well, all these appliances were like brand new also.
Oh, my gosh.
So it just was a very strange coincidence. They had, of course, the infamous windows and doors that open and close that seems to happen in every haunted house. These were regular occurrences. I mean, that happened daily. And one particular window would actually raise itself, and then it would slam shut. And it would raise itself, and it would slam shut.
Well, that's annoying.
Yeah, it was so annoying that actually Arnold went and nailed it shut. So one night, Arnold walked out to his car, and just before he got to the car, he said his car burst into flames.
Wait a minute.
There was nobody anywhere near the car. The car wasn't running at the time, and there was never a cause found.
That ghost was like, I'll show you, bitch.
Well, I'm thinking,
now my window's shut next time.
Initially, when this was the 70s, I just figured it was a Pinto. But
ping! Remember those funny commercials?
Anybody
that is so,
anybody younger than us won't remember.
Oh, my gosh, no. And that is so terrible. What if he had gotten in the car? He would have exploded it everywhere.
Yeah, I'm sure he would have.
Oh, my gosh. He was so lucky.
So they don't know if it was supernatural or just a weird coincidence, but regardless, that's what happened. So even though the place was obviously haunted, they had some companies to try to come in and do some repairs and renovations. So it's like, it's haunted, but what the hell? We'll stay here anyway. They didn't care. It was common for workers to actually call in sick or quit in the middle of the project.
Oh, I guess so.
Yeah. So some actually admitted that they didn't like working there at all because it was haunted. And then they just gave up and decided we'll just do the work ourselves. And that's what they did. It was like Tom Hanks in Money Pit.
Best movie ever.
So one day they actually started painting this closet. And it was in one of the bedrooms that they had. It was had a large drawer in it that was made for shoes. First of all, who the hell puts shoes in a drawer?
I don't know. That's not a bad idea, actually.
So this was like installed to where inside the back of the closet, the drawer actually went behind the closet. So it would be the drawer actually was flush with the back, but it would pull out because it was cut out behind the closet door.
Yeah. I like that, actually.
So they were out there, and Arnold was looking at it, and he was noticing, and he pulled the drawer out to paint around it so he could paint around the edges. And first of all, who paints a closet?
I really don't see the point in it, because when you, like me, and you just throw your shoes in the closet and it scuffs up the wall, I don't know. I don't think.
Right.
So anyway,
he pulls the drawer out so he could paint around the edges, and he says that once he pulled it out, he noticed that there was that opening, because he didn't know there was an opening.
Oh, he didn't even know about that.
Well, no, it just didn't make sense. But when he pulled it out, it's like there was this big black hole he could look into.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, told Ginger to go get him a flashlight, which she did. And once he shined it in there, he just kind of jumped back.
Oh, wow.
And he was scared to death because he said that there were bones back there in the compartment.
No.
Well, obviously, after gathering his wits, he was like, well, it makes sense. There's probably some kind of dead animal that crawled back there.
Oh, that's what he thought then.
So, but he couldn't get back in there because he was bigger. So he said,
yeah. And I'd be like, yeah, no.
Well, he said, we'll wait till the kids get home.
What a rat.
So he waited till the kids got home because they were actually smaller.
Yeah.
And he got his youngest daughter, Mary, to take the flashlight and crawl inside.
Why in the world would he do that?
To take a look because she was small enough. So, I mean,
I get it, but...
I get it, too, but...
He would think, if he thinks he's haunted, stuff's going on, you're going to send your little kid in there?
Well, he still wasn't thinking haunted, and so what if it was a ghost that's going to get you inside the closet or out of the closet, or it won't matter?
Sounds to me like he was just a puss.
Well, either way. So he sends Mary in there with the flashlight, and a few seconds later, she screams. She said that it was a human skeleton in there.
Oh, no.
She found a brown arm... So it wasn't even like bones. It was like, I guess, like a mummified type arm. So she found a brown arm, a portion of a leg, and a skull with long, stringy black hair.
Oh, bless her heart. She had to look at all that crap. That's awful.
So, but if you see the long, stringy
black hair,
it fits in with the apparition they were seeing, and possible the apparition that Mr. Lamont had seen. So oddly enough, the Henshaws never reported this to police. The reason that they gave was, the crime would have been committed so long ago based on the condition of the body, police wouldn't be able to do anything about it now. I call bullshit.
I call bullshit, too. That's so ridiculous.
It makes you really question the story right off the bat. And we're going to get into that story a little more when Craig comes on. So it'll be fun to see. Craig's not just going to get on here and spew stories about Summer Wind. We're going to talk about some of the questions and holes in these stories. So they left the body where it was because, you know, you wouldn't want to take it out and bury it or nothing like that. You know, let's just leave it there.
Oh, my gosh. That's so gross.
And I mean, wouldn't you think that if you had paranormal activity going on in the house and you find this skeleton that you would think, hey, maybe if we give it a proper burial, things would stop? But apparently that's not what they thought. They thought, hey, let's just shove it back behind the shoes because she's obviously happy where she's at. So one of the ghosts they saw had the black hair, like I said. So who the hell... was this person? Was this because there's no mention of her, especially when you talk about the white dress. I mean, that doesn't fit in with the British settlers. It doesn't really fit in with the Native Americans.
Right.
And nobody lost. There was nobody that passed away during the times that Lamonts were there. So, and that's who Lamont was seeing too. Mm. So it makes no sense whatsoever. So shortly after finding this body, things began to take a turn for the worse, as they always do.
Of course.
You ever notice that every story we do, there's always things take a turn for the worse?
I know. And that's bad enough as it is.
So the Henshaws had actually purchased a Hammond organ. You know, one of those like you have in the church.
Yeah, yeah.
They had purchased one of those before they moved into Summerwind. And Arnold actually loved playing it. He started, it was like therapeutic to him.
Yeah.
So he would play it before they moved in. It was something he just did to, you know, make things
less stressful.
And yeah, less stressful. Less stressful in his life. Absolutely. Well, now though, Arnold began staying up all night long and playing the organ, and it was like a creepy style of music, like you would hear, you know, dun dun dun.
Oh, you mean he changed the kind of stuff he was playing?
Yeah,
the
music? Now he's playing this creepy music and not like what you would use to play on an organ. It was just like this, you know, eerie stuff you would hear in a Frankenstein movie or something like that, and. So he would play a mixture of melodies that actually made no sense. And then it would get louder as the night went on. So Ginger would like beg him to stop. But he said that the demons in the house demanded that he play. So how about that?
Whoa. So they got into him, huh?
So musical demons. You got to like that, though.
Yeah, though. Yeah.
Sometimes he would actually just like slam his hands on the organ instead of actually just playing music. It was just like slamming it. And then he would repeatedly do that. And he would do this until dawn. He'd stay up all night long doing this.
Oh my God, that would drive you insane.
Yeah, and it scared the family so bad that like Ginger and the six kids would all be like in one bedroom in a corner just kind of cowering in fear and kind of crying. And
I can imagine when he goes to playing beautiful, calming music to that.
Right. So Arnold actually had a complete mental breakdown, and Ginger actually tried to commit suicide during this 6 months.
Aww.
The question is, did any of this happen? I mean, you're thinking about it, you know, were the parents mentally unstable to begin with? And that's what caused all this? What about the kids? The kids were saying that they saw stuff. They saw apparitions. They saw, heard, you know, voices and stuff like this. Were they really seeing stuff, or were they just influenced by the parents', actions? Because if you know, he had a mental breakdown, so was this something that was already an issue before they moved in that was ongoing, that this was the straw that broke the camel's back, or is this something that led to him having the breakdown? There's a lot of questions.
I can't say that. I mean, I don't know. I don't feel like that was something going on beforehand.
Yeah, but we don't really know their story beforehand, you know. So Arnold was sent away for treatment, and Ginger and the kids moved in with Ginger's parents, and in Grant, Wisconsin. After it became clear that Arnold wouldn't get any better, Ginger actually divorced Arnold, and then she remarried a gentleman by the name of George Olson.
So then she, her mind was clear after that. She didn't have the suicidal.
Nothing listed about it, so I can assume not.
Well, poor Arnold.
So things were actually going great for Ginger until her dad announces that he was going to buy Summerwind.
Are you kidding?
Right. Her dad, Raymond Bobber, was actually a popcorn vendor and a businessman. So he thought, hey, I can buy the place and move on.
Okay, after he heard what all was going on and this.
Well, that's, we're going to get into that. Okay. So things might not, according to this story, things aren't really as clear as that.
Okay.
So you would think. So he and his wife, Marie, actually wanted to turn it into a bed and breakfast or some type of a motel, hotel, and a restaurant. So they were, that's the lines that they were looking at. And they thought it would be a perfect spot because it sits right there on the, you know, the lake. It would be a good little destination for people to come to. Now, supposedly, they had no idea what happened to their daughter. That's what you're led to believe, that she had issues, but she never told them why.
Oh, she never told them?
Yeah. And Ginger was actually horrified that they were going to buy the house. And like I said, she had never given them the full details about what happened to her during that 6 months that they were there. And she wasn't about to tell them now. She refused to tell them anything that was going on now.
Why would she not tell them? That is the craziest thing.
Once again, makes you think there's more holes in the story. So I don't know. So what she did do was beg them not to buy Summerwind, but her dad's mind was already made up, and he said that he knew the house was haunted. This was a good one, but he didn't care because he had spent time at the house, and he knew who was haunting the house. According to Bobber, the ghost was actually an 18th century explorer by the name of Jonathan Carver. He claims, this is the good part, he claims that Carver was searching for an old deed that the Sioux Indians had given him, and actually the deed actually gave him the right to the northern third of Wisconsin.
Oh, gosh.
Which, by the way, this couldn't have been possible, but we'll get into that at some point. But the deed was actually put in a box, and it was sealed into the foundation of Summerwind. And Bobber said that Carver had asked him to help him find it. How? He came to him in a dream. So, this Jonathan Carver came to him in a dream and said, hey, help me find this deed. Now, first of all, this deed, there was supposedly a deed given to a Jonathan Carver.
Yeah.
So he did exist. But even if they had given him the deed, it wouldn't have been good today. So it wouldn't have mattered.
Yeah, that's true.
And also, it wouldn't have been good back then because he was a British settler, and the British refused or would not allow their soldiers and settlers. It was more or less, you know, but because he was from Britain, they would not allow him to take those gifts from anybody. That was part of the rules and regulations. So these Sioux Indians couldn't have gave him that property even if they put it on a deed. He couldn't have kept it anyway.
Oh.
So it was worthless from the beginning, and it would be worthless today.
Regardless.
So anyway, right after Bobber actually bought the house, his son Carl, Ginger, and her new husband George decided that they were going to go up there and spend a day checking the house out. And as they were leaving the second floor, George noticed that there was a closet with a secret compartment. Of course, that's her new husband. So he pulled the drawer out and started looking behind the drawer, and Ginger begged him not to. She does a lot of begging, apparently, to no avail.
Well, she's dumb. Why isn't she telling him?
So George was confused about why Ginger never told him about finding a body back behind a drawer, which I have my suspicions on why, because probably never happened. But anyway, she said the whole family down in the kitchen and decided that she was going to tell them the story. Okay. So as guys will do after hearing the story, they immediately ran upstairs to check it out.
Of course.
And Carl took a flashlight and he climbed through it and he said it was empty. Now, you know, it's amazing. Carl, for some reason, which was her brother, which is older, I think he was like 25 or something like that. I mean, he's not a kid. He was able to climb in there. But yet, Arnold couldn't climb in it. It took the daughter, Mary, to climb in. But yet, her brother somehow could climb through it. And I don't know the sizes. I mean, I guess that's possible. But it just, that just seems funny.
Stories were getting weird.
Right. So, obviously, Bobber and George also checked. And the question is, obviously, where did the remains go?
There was nothing.
Nothing.
Not one stitch of anything.
No.
Wow.
So at the end of the summer, Carl, the brother, he actually went to the house. He was all by himself. He came up there because he was needing to get some repair estimates, and he was going to check with somebody about getting rid of some bats. They apparently had an infestation of bats.
Yay.
And I don't know if they were Louisville Sluggers or like... But they were going to do some yard work and clean up and stuff like that. So it was actually raining the first day that he got up there, and he started going and closing windows because obviously he don't want to get rain in through all the house, so he's closing the windows. While he's upstairs in the hallway, he heard someone call his name. He said he looked around, but there was nobody in there, so he closed the windows and went downstairs. That's when he walked into the front room, and he says that he actually heard two gunshots.
What?
Yep. He ran into the kitchen. He said it was filled with smoke, and it smelled like gunpowder. So he actually goes and checks all the doors and all the locks. They're undisturbed, so he goes into the kitchen. He started looking around, and he sees two bullet holes in the door that's leading to the basement. Now, he initially thought these were new, but after examining them, he noticed that they'd obviously been there for a long time because they were kind of rounded out mm-hmm. around the edges and smoothed out just from years and years of being there. And they were the holes, obviously, from Robert Lamont.
Oh, my gosh. Why ain't nobody ever changed those doors?
What? I mean, I don't know. I guess some people like that kind of history.
Yeah.
That was enough to chase Carl away, at least for the day. So the rest of these renovations, they didn't go exactly smoothly either. You got workers who refused to stay on the job, complaints of feeling watched or missing tools, which you can imagine that would frustrate people. Marie Bobber actually said that she always felt like that whenever she was in the house, that somebody was following her around or she was constantly being watched. Mr. Bobber had his own concerns. He said the house was apparently growing.
What do you mean?
He would actually measure the rooms and then come back the next day and remeasure them, and they were a different size.
Oh, my Lord.
On top of that, he estimated that in what they were going to make the dining room for the restaurant, he estimated he could fit 150 guests into the restaurant, but the original blueprints would only fit about half of that.
Okay, now that's a big leap.
Right. So pictures that were actually taken seconds apart would prove this. Like, for example, the living room seemed to be the room that grew the most. Bobber took pictures of the living room, and he compared it to Ginger's when she would live there. And Bobber said that it was obvious that the rooms were bigger just in the pictures.
Okay, so why then, through all of this stuff that's happening, why didn't they just get somebody to come in and release the demons or whatever they had to do?
No idea.
I mean, wouldn't that make a little more sense to you that to have somebody to come in and do that or try to get rid of them?
I guess it depends on what your belief system is. So if you're not religious and you're seeing these things happen, I mean, who are you going to call? Somebody Jewish, somebody Catholic, somebody Protestant? I mean, I don't know what their religious background was.
Well, so. I just think it'd be easier than having to keep buying a bunch of tools.
Well, this was kind of cool. So, Bobber didn't have any curtains up in the place yet, okay? But when he took pictures, there was curtains in the pictures. And the curtains were the same ones that were in the pictures from Ginger when she lived there. So that's even though cool. He had no curtains, they were the curtains that she had when she was up.
Oh, gosh, that's so... Oh, that's creepy.
So anyway, he just decided that they were just going to scrap the plans of doing this restaurant and inn. And Bobber actually, it's funny, they never actually even spent a night in the house during all this. They stayed in an RV that was out there on the property, but they didn't stay in the house at all.
Not one night did they stay. Oh my gosh.
So I guess the question would be, if Jonathan Carver's ghost was who they thought was haunting the place, then why didn't they stay in the house?
Yeah.
I mean, he felt like he knew all the answers.
Yeah.
So that was my question. But anyway.
That is a good question.
And if he was such a jerk, this Jonathan Carver, I mean, if you're asking somebody, because I mean, this is the way I take it. If you're asking somebody to help you find a deed, why was he being such a jerk?
Yeah, that's not how you get somebody to help you to be in a butthole.
So that just doesn't seem right. So Bobber says that Carver just kind of, resented anybody that was trying to live in the house and make changes. And he thinks that was his philosophy. So he just didn't like the fact that people were trying to change, you know. But I don't know why he would care. He didn't live in the house. It wasn't his house.
Exactly. And you need to get over it already. Go haunt somebody else.
Well, I guess they figured at least till the deed was found that they shouldn't be doing any kind of remodeling or anything. And that's, I guess maybe it was like, hey, you need to focus on this and not remodeling. So anyway, so Barbara actually spent many days in the basement looking for the deed. He would check crevices and he'd chip away at the foundation. And to this day, the mysterious deed has never been found.
See, all that and you still didn't find it.
And Craig actually tells us a little bit about this possible deed being found and all this stuff when we talk to him for a little bit. So, and in 1979, though, here's where it all comes together. Barbara actually published a book about his experience at Summerwind and his communication with Carver through his dreams. And he said he talked to him through dreams and a Ouija board and trances. So he apparently talked to this Carver guy through several different ways. And
was he a big old liar?
I don't know. But the book was actually called The Carver Effect.
That's kind of a cool name, though.
Yeah, it's cool. But in the years to follow, Barbara actually abandoned Summerwind. Several skeptics started coming forward to kind of poke holes in his story. As you can imagine, one of the facts that Summerwind was actually built 130 years after Carver died. So the deed couldn't be in the foundation.
Oh, my gosh.
Carver died 130 years before the place was built.
Why didn't somebody figure that out from the beginning?
I mean, I guess if it's supernatural, I guess you could just place something anywhere.
So I wonder how many books he sold.
I don't know. You can't get it now, though. It's not imprinted.
Oh, it's not? You can't get it anywhere?
No. I imagine somebody's probably got a copy of it, but it's not something you can just readily buy. It's pretty hard to find. But one fact is that Summerwood was built, you know, like I said, 130 years later, so that can't have happened. Also turns out that Bobber wasn't the most credible person in the world. He used to try to operate concession stands and tours, because I told you he was a popcorn salesman.
Yeah.
And one of the things he wanted to do was actually, he wanted to put like a popcorn stand or some kind of concessions on the property. And then, I guess, maybe give tours of the haunted house.
Mm-hmm.
And then just have people buy the concessions and stuff like that. And the not the neighborhood association, but the zoning and stuff said, no, you can't do that. So they kind of nixed that. But that's kind of, you know, what he was doing out there. So it's kind of like he probably had an ulterior motive when he got the place to begin with.
Yeah, well, it sounds like he sure did.
So
what are I having to gender in all this?
Well, I don't know. You know, one of the things, though, about this is that's kind of fishy is there's questions about whether Barber ever actually bought the place or not. Because remember, it's the whole thing is he was buying Summerwind. But when you talk to neighbors say that the bank owned it, and they don't even think they knew what Barber was out there doing.
Oh.
Because they were saying that he was supposed to buy it contract for deed, but the deal fell through before they even did it. So they don't even know why he was out there trying to do anything. It was like he was being shysty and just trying to get enough time in there to be able to write a book and... So, yeah, that's, you know, and I think that's why the concession stand thing that he was trying to do maybe didn't work, because he didn't own the property.
Well, how much money do you think you're going to make off a concession stand?
I don't know, but if you write a book saying the place is haunted, you got a bunch of people coming and you're selling tours and concessions and all that. I mean, that's what
be true. Well, what a big turd.
But the neighbors hated all the visitors coming out there, as you can imagine, just like with Stoll Cemetery when we talked about that.
Yeah.
The house was completely abandoned in the 1980s, and it fell into complete ruins. Disgusting. I mean, it was bats were in there. It was completely infested with bats. The busted out windows and the doors obviously let in all the elements.
Yeah.
And over a period of time, it just was crap. And in 1986, it was actually purchased by three investors who wanted to try
open a popcorn stand.
No, they wanted to make it a bed and breakfast. And,
give it up already.
I mean, no kidding. But wasn't going to happen, because in June of 1988, Summerwind was actually struck by lightning twice, supposedly, and it burned completely to the
ground. Good.
Today, the only thing that remains is actually the foundation and the chimneys and like the steps leading up to it. So if you look up any pictures of it, which we'll post some on the Facebook page, it literally is just
There was literally
a foundation
meant for nothing to be there.
So the question is, did that really happen with the lightning striking it twice? Because
Why do you say there's
a lot of suspicion and maybe even some factual stuff that Craig's going to tell us about that possibly being arson from the neighbors.
Oh.
Much similar to the Stoll Church that we talked about at the Stoll Cemetery, where it just burnt down and nobody knew why, but everybody seems to think it's neighbors. But
so they were going to get rid of this asshole once and for all.
Right. And Craig has actually he's actually talked to a neighbor that claims he was there when they torched the place. So he tells us about that. He's actually got a video on YouTube.
Oh, wow.
Craig in his interview actually tells us all about that.
And that is great.
So that's what we're going to do now is we're going to listen to Craig. Because you'll like this because Craig tells us some cool stories that he's had personal experience. He spent the night up there several times.
He did? Because,
well, he's host of Fox Valley Ghost Hunters.
Yeah.
He founded that. He's an authority on Summer Wind, and he's got a couple of books out, but we're going to talk about all that
in
the interview. But we poke holes in some of the story. He gives his opinions on some of the stuff, and especially on the arson thing.
Seems like there's a bunch of holy holes.
Yeah. So let's listen to Craig real quick. All right, guys, I'm excited about this next guest. I've heard him on a lot of the bigger shows out there and reached out to him when I decided that I wanted to do the story on Summer Wind. And actually put it off by a week from when I was originally going to do it because it meant that much to be able to have Craig Nehring actually on the show, who I consider to be probably the foremost expert on Summer Wind. He may disagree, but I think every time I've ever heard anybody bring on a guest to talk about Summer Wind, it's always Craig, and he always does such a great job. Now, Craig's an author. He's actually got two books out now. One of them has been fairly recent, but it's Wisconsin Most Haunted 1 and Wisconsin Most Haunted 2. And he's also the founder of Fox Valley Ghost Hunters. Craig, thanks so much for giving us a little bit of your time.
Yes, thank you for having me on.
Like I said, it's no problem at all. And when I decided I wanted to do Summer Wind, I remembered hearing you. And I went back and researched some of the other podcasts and radio shows I'd heard you on. And it just made me that more excited about reaching out to you. And luckily, I had a few people that you've been on their show, and I was able to get some contact information and make this thing happen. So I'm excited about having you on and having you talk a little bit about Summer Wind.
Yeah, thank you.
So I got a couple of questions for you right off the bat. On Summer Wind, in our story, I've heard this told two different ways, that obviously Mr. Lamont, when he bought the mansion, what chased him out was the situation at the dining room where he saw a full-bodied apparition coming from the basement door. Now, I've heard that mostly that it was an apparition of a man, but I've also seen a couple of documents that said that it was actually a woman with black hair. Now, you've done a lot of research on this place. What do you believe he saw, and what have you heard more often?
I heard more often that it was a woman with a long white dress with long black hair that had come up through it might have been the basement doors or the foyer doors, where he had pulled out his black powder pistol and then shot at the woman, the ghost, the spirit coming up.
Cool. And like I said, that's, you know, it fits with a lot of the rest of the story with a lot of the other sightings that are out. That actually makes more sense to me. I was kind of at least hoping that's what the reality of it was. Now, obviously, as we get into this story a little bit, you got the different changing hands and a lot of different stories. Obviously, with the Henshaws, you know, you've got Mr. Henshaw basically going mad, I guess is what the best way to put it for back in that time frame. And then you've got a Ginger Henshaw committing suicide, a lot of crazy things happening, and her father-in-law buying the place. Do you buy the story that when they were trying to turn it into the bed and breakfast that they actually found a corpse back hidden behind the wall of that closet, or do you think that was just something to try to generate some excitement for the adventure they were going into?
I really truthfully think it was something to generate the excitement. Now, I know that when you had stated that Ginger Henshaw committed suicide, actually she had tried but failed.
That's actually what I meant to say. I apologize. Yeah. For that. Yeah, but she had attempted
suicide. Yeah, I just wanted to make sure that everybody knew that she didn't actually commit suicide.
No, it's, like I said, it's you know, if you listen to the story all the way to where she eventually goes back up there with her father-in-law as he's trying to turn into a bed and breakfast, or her father, rather, and then, you know, the body's not there, but she had supposedly not said anything about the happenings in the house, and everything just seemed to be extremely fishy, which is, I guess, fitting for an old fishing lodge, but...
I think it helped generate a lot for the book that would be coming out from the brother-in-law, Raymond von Bober, who had purchased it after them and wrote the book, The Carver Effect, and had a lot of that information in there. Now, the corpse that they found in the wall, they sent their youngest daughter, the Henshaws sent their youngest daughter into a crawl space, supposedly that they couldn't fit into, and when she had crawled in, she saw this, like, corpse with a skull with black hair hanging off of it, and she came out screaming. And the reports are that they never reported to the police, and when she returned, or when they returned to that crawl space, the corpse was gone. Now, we are in contact with the April Henshaw, who was the little girl that crawled into that crawl space. Of course, much older now, but... she's not willing to share a whole lot of details, but wants to make a lot of corrections to the story and what really happened, but won't go much further without having an attorney present.
Well, that's kind of odd. I mean, I don't know why she would feel like she would need an attorney if it's not like she could be implicated in anything, but
I guess... No, yeah, I know. But, yeah, I think a lot of that whole thing, cars starting on fire, I mean, there are no reports that I can find of any cars ever starting on fire, without anything causing it other than something saying that it was paranormal. There are no reports of any cars on fire up there at all. So that was also in the book.
So let me ask you this. Obviously, the mansion, the story was that it burnt down in the 80s because it was struck by lightning. Some people say it was struck by lightning twice. But you seem to think otherwise and have some documentation stating that. So what's your thoughts on how it came to its demise?
We've recently had one person in particular come forward who was basically up there during Father's Day weekend of 1988, and his uncle had the property next door. And a couple days prior to the mansion burning down, a town official had come out to the property, knocked on their door and said, "Hey, if you see a fire in the woods, you know, don't call the police or the fire department because we know about it. We're going to be on scene." And the guy that came forward basically told me, he said he knew right away what they were going to do. So he waited. The next night, it was Friday, the Friday of Father's Day. Nice sunny day, nothing really happened. It wasn't raining out at all, but the next night was a storm. He said the lightning wasn't even really that bad. It was just, he says, summer wind had been there since the 1900s, and why now? Why would lightning strike it now? But he said he was sitting on his front porch. He heard some commotion up by the summer wind property. They got him and a buddy got his raincoats on and walked up towards the property, and a fire truck was parked between the mansion and his house. Another fire truck was up on the road along with some Vilas County Sheriff's Department cars, probably making sure that nobody would drive down there to check it out. And he stated that when they got up to the mansion, they kind of watched from a distance under some trees, and they saw a brush truck-type fire truck back up to the mansion. Two guys got out, took some hay bales, walked it to the inside of the mansion, came back out, got a torch, went inside and lit it.
I mean, obviously, they were tired of people coming up there, and they didn't like all the publicity that it was getting. And, like I said, I've seen where they didn't like people trampling over their yards to get to the place. And by this time, it was an eyesore anyway. So, you can't really blame them, I don't guess. It's not the proper way to handle something, but you can see where they're coming from, I guess.
Well, Yeah, definitely. But the only problem is there's still people going up there, and probably maybe sometimes even more so than when it was there. I mean, I'm sure a little bit more when it was there, but there's still tons of people going up there. We've been up there many times doing investigations, and people are still coming from all over the place. I'm talking Indiana, Georgia, Kentucky, Illinois, Minnesota. They're all coming over just to take pictures of the iconic chimneys and the foundation that still remain.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because that actually segues me into the next part that I wanted to talk to you about. Tell me a little bit, because I know you've spent several times up there. I mean, I know you spent the night up there, like, you know, camping out on the property. You've had a lot of experiences up there. Tell me a little bit about what you guys have experienced personally at Summerwind.
We've had a couple different sessions where rocks, like little tiny rocks, maybe the size of pennies, would fall out of the sky. It started originally by one of our members throwing a rock into the foundation, and suddenly another rock comes from out of the foundation. Not sure where it came from exactly, but all of a sudden these like little rocks are like landing close to us, next to us. Now we thought there were possibly people in the woods, you know, kids from next door trying to play a trick on us. So we had some thermal cameras, and there was nothing, nothing at all. And it not only happened to our team, but it happened to another team that had gone up there at the same time a couple weeks later, and they had the same rock phenomenon. And I looked up birds on the internet, seeing if anything, you know, would drop rocks or something during the dark, and I couldn't find anything.
Well, I know you you guys have done a lot of EVPs up there as well, and that's the part, probably out of the rocks, I love that story, and the EVPs are the two most fascinating things I've heard you talk about. And I like the fact that some of your EVPs are really friendly towards you guys.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It basically brings me into two stories I want to touch on. We were doing an investigation up there. And probably, I'll put it back, probably about 2011, and there's no electricity up there. There's nothing that is going to set off the meters, so we had K2 meters up front. Nobody had their phones on them, because everybody knows that if you have your phones close to them, they can set them off. So the meters suddenly started going off, and we're running the ghost box to run white noise to be able to talk to them, and suddenly one of the ghosts that were kind of a male voice coming through kept saying we should go up the driveway, run up the driveway, vindictive, hurry, go get them, catch them, you know, get them right away. And we're like, well, what the heck's going on? And one of my team members says, well, why don't I go up the driveway and check to make sure everything's okay? I mean, they're talking about the driveway. So that was a little bit out of our sight. It's up over a little bit of a hill from the foundation. So he ran up to the driveway, and here there's three kids trying to break into the back of our vehicles.
Well, it's nice that you've got an anti-theft system through your ghost box.
Pretty much, and it didn't stop there. After we got settled, they ran off. We heard them get into a vehicle and take off down the road, and, you know, what are we going to do? It's not like we saw them or could get their plate number. So went back up to the foundation probably within the next half hour. Some more stuff comes on the ghost box saying, six coming up the driveway, hurry, get them now. And I'm like, oh my God, is this really happening twice? And we got a little smarter. We put some motion detectors about halfway down the driveway, and just before, as we took off to run to see if anybody was coming up the driveway, the motion detectors went off, and we caught four guys and two girls at the end of the driveway that were on their way up. So when the spirit said that six coming up the driveway, that meant that, I'm assuming, the six people walking up the driveway. The one girl was so scared from the motion detector went off that she peed her pants.
So, is this a common problem with people trying to break into vehicles and stuff? Since I would imagine they would assume you guys were probably paranormal investigators and probably expect you to have some expensive equipment. Do you run into that quite often?
That was the only time that we actually had that problem. Sometimes we'll have our five, six members of our team up there. We'll have a little fire going. We'll all be sitting around the fire, and we'll hear cars in the distance. We won't see them pull in, but suddenly here comes four or five, you know, young people, sometimes even older adults. They'll sit there and walk right past us while we're sitting by the fire. And I'll basically say, excuse me, what are you doing? They're like, well, we're here to see Summer Wind. I said, well, do you know the owners? They're like, no. I said, well, technically you're trespassing, and we actually have permission to be here. And it's kind of sad because, you know, with that whole story of Robert Lamont, or actually it would have been Raymond von Bober having the dream about an explorer named Jonathan Carver bearing a deed to one-third of northern Wisconsin and the foundation of Summer Wind, which I can tell you, I studied his travels. He actually never made it as far north as the Summer Wind property, so there's nothing buried in the foundation of Summer Wind, but yet you get all these people going up there, and they're slowly and gradually breaking away at the foundation, the bricks, pulling them out, trying to find what's really not there.
Well, and the other thing is, you know, he died like 100 years, a little over 100 years before Summer Wind was even built. There's no way it could be in the foundation.
No, no, not at all. And it was just a dream as well. In fact, according to what I heard, and I've had a couple people trying to find this, but they stated that the deed to whatever Jonathan Carver had a deed with the Native Americans was found in a museum in England. I'm still trying to find where that museum is, but haven't had any luck.
Well, and then, you know, I've seen other things. We didn't really talk about it in the show, but, you know, I've seen that even if they had found the deed, it was worthless, so it didn't matter that it was.
Yeah, I don't know if they just think it's something unique that they're going to find, like a treasure, like, oh my God, I found the deed to one-third of northern Wisconsin dating back to the early 1900s. But, you know, why? It's, like I said, it's still private property. It's not like it's something public that you can, you right. should, you know, just traipse upon.
So, tell me a little bit about, I've heard you tell a story, I guess a woman had came to you and talked about when her younger days, she had some experiences up there while she was out on the lake with a friend of hers on the boat. Touch on that a little bit for me.
Yeah, the woman that I had talked to, now this was about 4 or 5 years ago, her name was Emily. She was in her 90s and she lived on the other side of the island. I don't know if she's still around or if she had passed away. But she had, in great detail, could tell us stories that had happened while they were younger, when her and her friend was younger. They, I think they said they were around 10 years old or something, they decided to go fishing out on the lake, and they were rolling around out in the lake when a really bad storm was coming up. So they were looking to get some shelter and saw on the shoreline, here comes that woman again, with the long white dress and the black flowing hair, waving at them to come to shore to get out of the storm. So they rowed the boat to the shoreline, got in up on the shoreline, and she motioned them to come up to the house, which at that time was actually called Lilac Hills. Didn't change the name until Summer Wind later. But they followed her up to the mansion, and she waved them inside, and they came inside. She waved them to sit down on the couch. They sat down on the couch. She started going up the stairs and disappeared halfway into the staircase as she went up the stairs. The girls were so frightened that they said that they just ran out of there kind of screaming. And by then the rain had died down a little bit, so they got back in their boat and rowed back to their house. The next day they said that they were still curious of, you know, what had happened and wanted to go back and see what was going on. So they rowed in that direction, the boat, towards the mansion again, and this time the woman in white was waving them away, saying, like, hey, get out of here, we don't want you here, and stuff. They were a little bit angered by that, by, you know, why she would do that when they invited them there the first time. So they went back home and found out the next day that one of the caretakers were shooting at people on the property. I guess he went kind of crazy. No one was killed that I'm aware of, but.
So let me ask you this. It's obvious this keeps coming up. So we've got the lady in the white dress, black hair. It was supposedly seen by the Henshaws. You've got the body that was found that had the black hair. Like I said, a lot of the stories have to do with the shooting down in the dining room at the basement doors, seeing a lady with a white dress and black hair. Any ideas who this may be? Any inkling at all?
There was stated, when I first started going going to the property, there was a grave marker on the property. This was before everybody started vandalizing stuff, and right now it's even looked like somebody tried to dig it up at some point. But there was a cross there, and it had a girl's name on it, or a woman's name on it, named Lucy. Now, Lucy has appeared in many different stories over the history of Summer Wind as being a little girl that, now they're saying a little girl there, but they're saying that a girl that was buried on the property back in the day when you were allowed to bury your loved ones on the property without taking them to the cemetery. My thoughts is it's possibly this, but I'm not sure where she fits in the timeline of who owned the place, because we can't find anybody with any daughters or wife's name named Lucy. Now, what's kind of cool is we did an investigation there while doing the world's largest ghost hunt, which was documented on through the, I'm sure you're familiar with the world's largest ghost hunt that they had going on last year.
Yes.
Okay. So we were picked to do Summer Wind up there, and we went up to Summer Wind there, and we had about 25 guests up there, and one of the guests was videotaping some staircases, the staircases that go up to the foundation, to the porch of Summer Wind. The first time she went around with her video camera, there was absolutely nothing there. But the second time that she went around with her video camera and was coming up the stairs, there looked like, clearly it looked like there was a woman wearing a white dress. And she didn't walk away. She kind of glided away. And this woman, the guest that was up there that was videotaping, captured this. And it made the world's largest ghost hunt as well on their feed as some really interesting evidence from Summer Wind.
See, that kind of stuff's awesome. And so let me ask your honest opinion. So you've been up there a lot. You've got EVPs. We've heard stories from basically three different owners. And then, you know, I guess I'm just kind of at a point where I don't know who to believe and who not to believe. I think I tend to believe the Lamont story just because of the credibility of who he was in society. I don't know how much I believe after the fact, or at least fully after the fact, but there's obviously something there. You guys have experienced it. What do you believe and not believe about the stories of Summer Wind?
Well, I don't believe a lot in the whole corpse they found in the wall. You know, is it possible? I guess it's possible. But again, how do you prove that with no real documentation, no police reports? I found that the cars that supposedly had started on fire didn't start them. You know, there were no reports of any fires up there from cars and automobiles. Now, the other things that happened, you know, throughout what people had said were rooms changing sizes. One day they're one size, and then when they measure them the next day, they'd be a different size. Is it possible? You know, I don't know. I don't. It's hard to tell. You know, like you said, what do you believe and what don't you believe? I definitely believe it's haunted because we've had enough stuff happen to us up there that, you know, definitively, even from the EVPs to things touching our guests to us getting touched to some really really what do you want to call it? The ghosts that are really good at communicating, the intelligent ghosts up there that answer your questions with a legit answer, definitely would have to say that it's haunted. But as far as everything that's happened throughout the history, I don't know if I believe in all that.
Well, you know, I don't believe in a lot of what Ginger and Arnold Henshaw had to say, but at the same time, something had an effect on Arnold because he obviously didn't do very well with his nervous breakdown, and he did spend time in a hospital over it, and Ginger did have a suicide attempt. So, I mean, I don't know that some of what they said was real and maybe some of it was fabricated, but something had an effect on him without a doubt in a short time.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, so I could talk to you about Summer Wind all day long, but...
No, well, yeah, definitely.
I actually want to get into some of your other work, but before we do that, you were actually involved in a project on trying to get Summer Wind back to its glory days. Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. I'll actually give you two little secrets to Summer Wind before I get into that. The first secret of Summer Wind I mentioned earlier that was originally called Lilac Hills. The name Lilac Hills was the original part of Summer Wind. It actually didn't change till Summer Wind, till Raymond von Bober had it. And how it changed was he walked out to the end of the driveway and found the sign laying in some dirt, and it said Summer Wind. It changed from Lilac Hills then to Summer Wind. And most people will just call it the Lamont Mansion, but for overall purposes, it's, you know, known to most by Summer Wind as well. One of the other little secrets of Summer Wind is Arnold Hinshaw wasn't his real name. That was a stage name because they didn't want, you know, with everything that happened to get out, he didn't want his name tarnished. So his actual real name was Jim Hill. So that's something unique that we just found out recently.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I had no clue about either one of those.
Yep. So, yeah, Jim Hill was, and I guess Jim Hill and Ginger Hinshaw were never married. So that's another thing that is different than from what I've heard.
Well, see, the place is just full of secrets.
Yeah, definitely. We call it Secrets of Summer Wind. But, yeah, going to what we're trying to do is with the current owners bought it in 1986, and it was bought as an anniversary present. The husband bought it for a wife because her wife asked the husband, can you come home with something different for my anniversary? I want something unique. So he comes back with the deed to Summer Wind. Yeah. Any guesses on what it sold for back then? I know.
Oh, man. 60,000.
Not half that, but yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and the land, from what I read about what the land, and, you know, just the land is worth is upward around 200,000 right now, so without even the house being there.
Well, it's a pretty good investment then.
Yeah, definitely. Just no house there. But yeah, what we're trying to do is, like I said, the owners bought it in 86. They wanted hopes that they wanted to work on it and maybe turn it into a bed and breakfast. And in 1988, lightning supposedly struck it twice. Twice, yeah. Now, that's hard to believe as well, just because the mansion was so tattered, weathered, you know, water-wise, that would probably have been really wet. And the night of the storm, that probably would have been pretty hard just to get a fire going with the rain, unless you had the right elements. But we're hoping that we can help the owners turn it back into a bed and breakfast. We've been working with some people. Actually, Jeff Belanger had actually gotten a hold of us not long ago, hoping that he could find a producer or something that would do like a couple seasons on the rebuilding of Summer Wind and maybe help us out financially there. But so far, he hasn't found someone that wants to take the challenge. He said it's a unique challenge because no one has ever rebuilt a haunted house. They've done, you know, like move this house or you know tweak my house or something like that, but they've never actually rebuilt a haunted house. So it'd be something unique and different, but there's also a risk there, as in rebuilding a haunted house. You don't know if you get your money back. So
is the plan to try to rebuild it back to specs, to where it looks like it did in its glory days, or is the plan just to have a whole different architectural style?
Nope. Actually, we got the original blueprints from back from the Robert Lamont days, and the blueprints are even stated, I think, on the blueprints 1916 or something like that, or 1920. But we got the blueprints all the way down to the skeleton key, so we'd like to redo it. And what it looked like on the outside would be what it looked on like on the outside if we were to rebuild it today. Of course, with all the, you know, codes now being different on the inside, and it would be like my idea, and even the owner's ideas would be like to be like a lodge with all the history of, you know, of what had gone on over the years being part of the lodge inside. I got the original shutters from the house as well that were given to me by the guy that came forward to tell us about the town possibly causing the fire on purpose. So it'd be really cool to have people be able to come there and, you know, not trespass, but be able to actually stay the night and hopefully what we would think that it would be just as haunted as it was before, because whatever is there is still there. So,
yeah, I mean, a lot of people believe that the area was haunted even before there was, you know, the mansion was even built there. So, I mean, I can't imagine that it would change just by putting a new structure there.
No, definitely not. I mean, I got a lot of people that believe in what we're doing, and then you got the people that say, oh my God, you shouldn't build that. It burned down for a reason. It's the devil's property. I'm like, well, you can think what you want to think, but, you know, I if the ghosts are warning us about certain situations happening there, and even some of our EVPs that we captured there, like little girl dead, there's a voice that came through that said, little girl dead is your friend. You know, maybe that's referring to the girl Lucy. I don't know. Another one, the ones that warned us and basically told us, hey, you know, someone's coming up the driveway. Some of the ones that we would ask them if they want the mansion rebuilt, the spirits would say, yes, we do.
Well, the spirits are in favor. What about the neighbors? Are they in favor of the project, or are they just kind of hoping that it never comes together?
The neighbors I've talked to, and they wish us luck. They say it's been tried before, I think twice before. I don't know who tried before. Maybe that would have been with Bober and, you know, trying to rebuild it into a bed and breakfast. That might have been his idea. For the most part, they're okay. They don't like the constant, like, you know, earlier, they don't like the constant people going out there still to this day. You know, if someone's lost out there, they drive up the wrong driveway, they'll knock on their door. Where's Summer Wind? Well, they've been hearing that for, you know, 50-some years. Where's Summer Wind? How do I get to it? So they're tired of the people just kind of driving up there. Now, hopefully, building it into a bed and breakfast, there'll be some, what's the word I'm looking for? They'll basically be able to know where the property is rather than driving down somebody's driveway. They'll have permission to be there. And, you know, hopefully, if it gets built into a bed and breakfast, they'll know it's a bed and breakfast and not just some place you can come and party and hang out.
Yeah, that makes sense. So do you guys have an estimate on what it's – I mean, obviously you do, but do you guys already have a working price on what it's going to take to rebuild this thing?
From some of the people that looked at our blueprints based on, you know, we're not going to have all the outbuildings like the garages, the maids' quarters, the servants' quarters. It'd just be the main mansion, and, you know, we can probably work it so it's, you know, a smaller, you know, not like a huge – 5-6 bedroom bed and breakfast, but more like a 3 bedroom bed and breakfast, something like that. They were talking close to $500,000. Now they said if we knew the right people, and I do know some people that do masonry, excavating, all that, so that's a big help. Even got tons of people that would follow our Summer Wind Restoration Society page on Facebook saying they'd love to come up there. They'll pound nails for free just to be a part of the rebuilding process. They said, we'll haul the metal out. We'll work on the trees. We cut trees down. We'll help you with the you know, all the plants and shrubs around that, get rid of that stuff. So there's a lot of people that want to help. So that might make the process a little bit cheaper.
Yeah, that would be really cool. And like you said, if you can, you know, eventually get one of the TV shows or something to hook up with you, that obviously I think would go a long ways on getting this thing done.
Yeah, I think if the money was there, I don't think they would hesitate in the least to cover the story. Even the History Channel for sure, probably. But, I mean, I know lots of people now that, you know, if they had money, if I had the money, seriously, if I had the money, I'd do it right now and, you know, make it not my own, but say, hey, come and check out this place. I want to, you know, build it into something unique, something fantastic. So well, all it takes is really one person, so.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully that person comes because, I mean, I think it would be something fantastic to have rebuilt. And like you said, how often do you get to rebuild a haunted house? I mean, that's a phenomenal thought in its own. That somebody,
oh, definitely.
You know,
I don't even think there's anybody that's ever done that. I mean, buying haunted houses and refurbishing, but not doing something from the ground up that has a history of a, you know, U.S. Secretary of Commerce.
Well, if it ever gets done, there will be a very long waiting list of people to spend the night there. There won't be any doubt about that. So
no, it's funny because I got people calling me every once in a while now. Hey, if you get it built into bed and breakfast, can you put our name down on the list to call us first?
Yeah, you and 7,000 other people.
Yep.
All right. So Summer Wind, like I said, it's an awesome story, but Wisconsin has several awesome stories, as I found out through your books. And I thought I would give you some time to maybe share a story or two from each one of the books that you found the most fascinating that really sell the book for you, and then give you a chance to be able to tell people how to buy the book to hear all the other stories.
Yeah, the first book that I wrote, I can't say I like one or the other better than. The first book has a little bit of more of a understanding for me in the paranormal field, basically because in the first book I wrote about my girlfriend that passed away in 2015 from a tumor on her spinal cord. And she always used to jokingly around with me, joke with me saying, you know, once she passed away, she would haunt me. Kind of funny in itself, but this is what kind of made my whole paranormal, my ghost hunting worth what I do. When she had passed away, she passed away in Rhinelander, Wisconsin, and at a trailer at her parents' house. And I did an investigation there with the ghost box, the spirit box, and I was able to communicate with her. She basically said she missed me and she loved me. When I asked her what her nickname that I had for her, she would say my name, the nickname was Munchkin, because that's what I called her, my little Munchkin. So a very kind of a touching story. It was hard for me to tell people that for a long time, because it just kind of, you know, something that you don't plan on ever doing. You go on all these ghost hunts, but you never really talk to anybody you really know. And suddenly I'm talking to someone that was close to me that passed away. So that was fantastic in itself. And then finding out that she couldn't just talk to me there. She talked to me at my new place that I moved into. And then now I just moved to Green Bay, Wisconsin, and I've been able to communicate with her there as well. So for the people that state that ghosts are trapped where they're at, well, it's possibly if there were some murders involved or somebody did a bad crime, maybe they're trapped there. But definitely not the case in my girlfriend that passed away, whom I've been able to talk to in three different locations.
Yeah, that's when it becomes personal like that. It's like you said. It's I was reading a story the other day, and it was some kids and women. It was actually the story, and I don't know if you're familiar with this, but it's really intriguing. But it was a story of the American version of the Dyatlov Pass that happened in California in the 70s, and they couldn't find. There was these five young boys that went missing. They all had special needs, and one of the dads was out as a search party, and he actually found his own son. And it's just like, that story just hit me so hard, as I couldn't imagine being part of the search party. And they all told him not to do it, just for that just odd chance that he might actually come across. But looking through all these acres of woods, over 20 miles worth of woods, he just happened to stumble across the body of his own son. And wow. I don't know, I just felt that gut-wrenching. And you know, to hear your story, like I said, when you can actually, you're used to talking to people, at spirits and on the ghost box, but to know that that's somebody that's meant a lot in your life, especially in something as recent as what that was, I just can't imagine how that must have felt. It was probably bittersweet, I'm assuming.
Yeah, like I said, it was hard, it was rough. I did a lot of seminars on it, and I would explain my story, and it was even hard doing that. A lot better now. I think I got more closure by being able to talk to her afterwards rather than not hearing from her at all. I still don't know where she's at, but hey, you know, it's, at least we know we can possibly communicate with our loved ones once they're gone.
Yep, I agree. That's. I had an experience, you know, I'm not going to bore you with the details of it, but I had an experience where my mother came to me through some other people just out of the blue in the most random of places, and for me, that changed my whole concept of life. I mean, it's at that point in time, I was guaranteed, even though I believed it before, I was guaranteed the knowledge that there is an afterlife. And you just see everything so different once that's embedded in your brain.
Yeah, definitely. So in the first book, Wisconsin Most Haunted, some of the stories in there, they're pretty awesome. From a school in Wisconsin Rapids called First Ward School. If you ever get a chance to visit that, the guy there that owns it, his name is Justin Livix. He's amazing. He believes that, you know, you shouldn't provoke ghosts. You shouldn't taunt them. They're basically human beings once alive that are now not passed, you know, crossed over or whatnot or moved on. And so you should treat them with respect like you should treat everybody in today's world.
I agree with that. And that's, you know, you see some of these ghost hunting shows, you know, I won't name names, but
no,
you know what I'm talking about.
Probably, yep,
but,
yep.
But it's disrespectful.
Yep. I mean, if you want them to communicate with you, I would, you know, I'd be polite, you know, rather than, you know, I don't believe you're there. You're, you know, calling them some names or whatnot. So then my new book, Wisconsin Most Haunted, Volume 2, which ran into a little snag last week. It was available on Amazon. Suddenly it was held up because they didn't believe that I was the author. I had to send in some not necessary documentation, but state that I am the author. I own the rights to it and everything like that, which I guess is safer than that, having someone, you know, steal your idea and try to make it their own. So I guess it's good on their part that they, you know, went to that extreme. So it was it was now available as of today again this morning. So it's back up on Amazon.com. So was my first book, Wisconsin Most Haunted. But Wisconsin Most Haunted Volume 2, one of the stories in there that means quite a decent amount to me was one of our very first investigations. When I got started in 2010, one of our first investigations was a haunted hospital in Wisconsin. And it was the very first time I ever captured an EVP, the very first time I ever heard a disembodied voice. I mean, I try to find things that scare me now, and it's actually kind of hard to actually go into places. I don't get as scared as I used to when I was first starting out. When I was at the hospital that we investigated in 2011, we were in the basement of the hospital where the morgue was at. And then there's like a weird sub-basement below that basement that had like the furnace and stuff in. And we were looking down the stairs. It was pitch black. I couldn't see the hand in front of my face. And I called out, "Is there anybody down there?" And a voice comes back clearly and it says, "No." And it's this faint whispered voice, just kind of long, almost like a growl. It scared the living crap out of me to the point where I had to take a break and walk away.
I could definitely understand that. And were you by yourself at that point?
I had one other guy with me, but he was just kind of a friend. He wasn't on the team, and he was just like hanging out with me. I wanted to show him the place, and he's like, "What? What's wrong?" He didn't hear it, but it sounded like the whatever whispered to me was right next to me. And you know, being that it was my first investigation and very first time that I captured an EVP, it was amazing. Amazing investigation, and I wrote that in the storyline of the new book. So,
I posted last night on our, well, it was last night when we're talking, but it'll be a couple of days late by the time this airs. But I posted a video where it was a little bit of a preview of the book, and then I'm posting ways to be able to get a hold of you. So what's the best way if somebody wanted to reach out to you to ask questions or to get the book, what's the best way they can get a hold of you?
We're all on Fox Valley Ghost Hunters on Facebook. You can also get a hold of us on foxvalleyghosthunters.com in the comments, or call us. We got our phone numbers listed on there. I hate giving out my phone number because I get prank calls all the time, but in the amount of years that we've been doing this, I've only had 3 phone calls that were pranks, so we're doing pretty good. But yeah, foxvalleyghosthunters.com. Definitely check us out on Facebook under Fox Valley Ghost Hunters. We also run Summer Wind Restoration Society on Facebook and Wisconsin's Most Haunted Places on Facebook.
And you guys don't just stay in Wisconsin, because I know you've got some other stuff going on in some other states. I seen you were going to, and I might have missed this, might have you've already went, but what about the Illinois? You were going to check out a school or something in Illinois. Am I right about that?
We're actually doing an event down in, it's actually in Iowa.
Iowa, called, that's what I meant.
Yep, the Farrar Haunted Schoolhouse. We're doing an event for the public to come join us on a one-night or two-night VIP investigation down there.
So how does your group out of Wisconsin end up in Iowa?
Basically, we started out, I've been to the school 14 times, so, going now, I think will be our 15th time. The school is just amazing with so much activity. We've had so much evidence come from that place alone, from, you know, EVPs covering some of our investigators would sneeze and the spirit would say, "Bless you." And so they seem to be, for the most part, nice ghosts there, but we've also been scratched there. Had some growls there. It's a place where your footsteps are like a common occurrence. And we've been there so many times that we know the owner so well that we did an event last year and it sold out in like literally 3 months. And this year we just put it up just recently. So we only got about 9 VIP spots left, and the VIP spots for the two-night investigation will be sold out.
Well, that's, and like I said, for, I'm sure there's a lot of people, of our listeners that are in that area, especially that, you know, that's something you need to jump on. And where can they find the information on your website?
On our website, as well as, it's on our website, and it's also, we have the event listed on our Facebook page as well. And we're actually, I'm actually in the process of writing a third book. I'm on like the second chapter right now, and that's covering all of my, all of ours and all of mine out-of-state investigations. So that'll be the third book.
I know we're getting ready to do a live event in April in at Waverly Hills, and you were there, what, this past August, if I believe.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. We had a great time there. It's an amazing place just to see the place and think in your mind what happened there from all the patients that had passed away. The body shoot is just beyond creepy. I mean, it's got two different zip codes. Yeah. It's so long.
it's an amazing place, and man, I know we put up to do that event, and there was only 50 tickets available for the tour that night at Waverly. And we put it up, and all but four tickets sold out within the first 24 hours. And
yeah.
I know we got people coming from as far away as Texas, Michigan, 8 hours away in Virginia. So I know our listeners out there travel. So that's when I say the event you're doing at in Iowa, I wouldn't be surprised if you get some of our listeners come out that way because they love those type of events. But
yeah, and it's not really expensive to. Spend one night investigating with us just Friday alone. And, you know, some people would rather do one night than the whole weekend. It's only $60 a person, but to spend two nights and one full day. And we do have seminars during the day on Saturday from different, you know, speakers and stuff. And, you know, free dinner and door prizes and everything. It's 42 hours in there. Basically, you're going to spend 42 hours and you get to sleep in the school. And it's only $140 a person for 40 hours. 40 plus hours in there.
Oh, see, that's awesome. That's a great price for something like that. Because I know the prices at Waverly to do an investigation there are way, way more money than that.
Oh, yeah. And then, like I said, you can sleep here, too. So you don't have to go and get a motel, which will cost you even more. So,
yeah, if I took my wife, trust me, we would be leaving and going to a hotel. She would not sleep in that place. So, I got to tell you, Craig, I appreciate it. I knew this was going to be great, and it's been one of my favorite interviews. I appreciate you coming on. And, man, I wish you the best of luck. And when you get the third book out, man, I'd love to have you back on again.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you very much for having me.
All right, Craig Neary and everybody, make sure that you go to the website and check it out and sign up to, because like you said, you're limited on these tickets for the schoolhouse in Iowa. And I think you guys would have a blast out there, and especially you guys that can't come to the events here because you're a little further out west, that will work out perfect for you guys. So thank you, Craig. I appreciate it, and we'll be talking to you soon.
Yep, thank you. Have a good night.
So I think that just based on what he said, I think it was without a doubt arson, because if you got somebody that's got that specific of details, I mean, from where the fire trucks were to the fact that they purposely blocked the road off.
Yeah.
You know, without a doubt, there's no doubt that was arson.
I definitely believe that story a lot more than I believe all that other
lightning
stuff.
Lightning striking twice.
Yeah.
Because we all know lightning doesn't strike twice at the same time. That's the story we've always heard.
Yeah.
Anyways, I also thought it was cool that he shed some light on the fact that his side of what he's heard was that Mr. Lamont actually did see the woman in the white,
mm-hmm.
rather than a man, apparition of a man.
Right, right. Well, I tell you, you had me all the way to the story until you got to the end, and it's like, man.
And, you know, and like I said,
it's hard to believe what people will actually, links they'll go to. You know what I'm saying?
And like I said, he, you know, he's pointed out that there was no, you know, to not, the whole Henshaw thing, to not turn in, hey, I found a body, but I didn't turn it into police.
Yeah,
come on.
I mean,
what
in the hell?
That makes no sense whatsoever. I just, you know, I believe that there's stuff up there because obviously they've got EVPs and stuff up there, but I don't believe anything that the Henshaws had to say.
Right. Why would you, any person in the right mind would not just leave that in that closet?
Yeah.
Why would you do that?
Nothing they really said panned out. And, but I also like the fact that Craig said that, he's been trying to get in touch with the daughter, Mary, that supposedly went inside and found it. Because he says now that she's much older, because this happened in the 70s, but he said that she is willing to talk, but he just hadn't been able to set up an interview.
Right.
And she's being really picky about what she says and doesn't say.
I bet. That would be interesting to hear, though.
Oh, it would be. Guys, we greatly appreciate you listening. This has been fun having you guys. We started a Facebook group. Hey, we need to mention that.
Oh, my gosh. Yes. Well, okay, actually.
I was
going
to say, let me rephrase that.
Yeah, let's rephrase that.
So a lot of you guys have been asking us to do a group, and as I keep reportedly saying, that's just another task. Not that we don't want to. It's just another task, to be honest with you. I just don't have time for. And Natasha from Australia actually sent us a message and said, hey, basically, if you're not going to do it, is it okay if I do it? And I told her I would, and we would help out as much as we could. So she took the bull by the horns and started a Facebook group. And it's actually been way more fun than I realized.
Oh, my gosh.
It has
been so fun. I mean, I don't know about this rapping thing that you guys are talking about.
Yeah, she put a poll up on whether she wanted to hear Tracy rap more, me to rap, me and Tracy to do a rap battle, and stuff like that. And it's cool because everybody gets involved and everybody's voting, and you can see how many votes you have for each. And like I said, I would have probably started one of these a long time ago if I knew how much fun it would be. I didn't think there'd be that much interest, and we had like 200 people.
Oh my gosh.
The first 3 days it was up.
I know. And we are so appreciative for you to do that. I mean, like Jerry said, it's a lot of fun clicking on there and seeing what people say. And it just tickles me to no end.
Yeah, because unlike the regular Facebook page where we post stuff and some people can comment, they're actually people are sharing their own stories. It's
great.
Just people are talking about the show, what they liked about this episode or that episode. Mm-hmm. And they're giving you a lot of different show ideas that some of them I've already found that we're going to use.
Yeah, it's so
for
helpful.
Upcoming. It's more you guys interacting with each other than it is us. And yeah, we do chime in and we post some stuff on there, but it's completely different than the regular Facebook page. It's nothing the same at all on there. So if you want to join, just look up Hillbilly Stories. What's the name of our show?
Hillbilly Horror Stories.
It's been a long week.
It sure has.
Hillbilly Horror Stories Group. Just look that up on Facebook. You'll have to send a request. You don't have to answer any questions or anything like some of the groups. Send us a request, and one of us will approve it, and we'll have some fun with it. But I think you guys will love it, and I'd like to see that thing get up to as many people who want to listen. So if you want to engage with other listeners, it's pretty fun.
Yeah, we're happy to hit that join button or accept or whatever it is.
Yeah, we're hitting some kind of button.
Yeah, the more the merrier. It's, like I said, we appreciate you doing that. That is really very thoughtful of you to do, and we appreciate it. And I'm just, like I said, having the best time looking at all that stuff, and like I'll be at work looking at it, and then I like bust out laughing, and my boss is like,
people are posting jokes and they're posting what they liked about this, and it's just fun.
It is fun.
It's a little hard for us to get used to because I don't know. It almost, you're used to seeing pages like that for celebrities, and we don't put ourselves in that category. So to think that somebody across the world would want to do a fan page for us, it means a lot to us.
It sure does.
So
you guys are the greatest.
We absolutely love you. And what would make it even greater is if you went and bought T-shirts.
Now let's not be greedy now.
But don't forget that we've got that. And Patreon, we are coming up with an episode tomorrow night, which I think is going to be really cool. And I'm going to give credit to one of our listeners, Tina Oler, because she brought up on the group, she brought up about Haunted Mammoth Cave. And that brought up a story that I think a lot of you will find fascinating. And I won't give a ton of details here, but my fourth cousin is actually a famous cave explorer by the name of Floyd Collins. And Floyd was actually part of the biggest media frenzy in the 20s, because it was right after broadcast radio really just started. And he was trapped in a cave, and there was literally papers all over the world were covering this. There were thousands of people showing up at the site while they were trying to uncover him. And in between World War I and World War II, there really wasn't a lot of stories, but this was actually the third biggest story during that time between the two world wars. And the only two stories that were bigger was Charles Lindbergh's transatlantic flight and him having his baby when his baby was actually kidnapped. And for that to be the third biggest story behind those two stories shows you how big of a deal it was. But it's a heartbreaking story. And then after, you know, the end, it really still isn't the end. There's more heartbreak after that. And we get into all the details. So she talked me into actually telling the story on the show. It's not really paranormal. It's not really true crime. But there's a tad bit of paranormal attached to it. So I think it's pretty cool, but I think you'll like it, and that's what we've decided to do for our Patreon episode. So if you want to become a member and hear that, it's the $5 a month pledge, and I think you guys would greatly enjoy this little story.
Absolutely, and keep those reviews coming, everybody. We love them, and, you know, like we've said probably 100 times before, it really helps us in our ratings, and I look forward to looking at them every single day. It just, you know, just a bright spot in my day, so.
Yeah, I finally added Tracy to the our Hillbilly Horror Stories Facebook page because she hadn't been she'd been a member, but she hadn't been like a moderator, so she couldn't answer and stuff.
Yeah, what's up with that?
So now she actually responds and stuff like that. So mm-hmm. when you write, or before it was always me that would respond, yeah. now it could be either one of us.
Yeah, and it'll always be me. I'll be happy all the time.
Yeah, if you see like, oh, yay, that's not me. You could probably figure out which ones are her, which ones aren't.
You guys make our day. You really do. I hope you all know that. And we just, like I say, we love you guys so much. And we are excited for more exciting things to come up this year. And we'll get to meet a bunch of you guys, which is like, we are so looking forward to that.
Oh, speaking of which, I guess I need to bring this up.
That was the other thing.
Yeah, I need to bring this up. We're doing a live event the live event is actually in Louisville, but it's before that. We're going to actually go to Waverly Hills Sanatorium, and we're going to be taking a tour there, and there are only 4 tickets available left.
Mm-hmm.
We had 50 tickets, and the first 46 sold the same night that we said that they were available.
Oh, dude, like in 2 hours they were gone.
I mean, it was amazing. But this is what we're going to do is we're going to have a live event at a place called Roosters, which it's a wing place similar to Hooters. Some of you don't. And we've reserved a room, and what we're going to do is Mike Brown from Pleas and Terrors. We're going to be there, me and Tracy, and then you're also going to have Diane and Denise from History Goes Bump. We're all going to be there. We're all going to do about a 30-40 minute live show, and then it's going to be a meet and greet and just talk to you guys, and then we're going to have a question and answer period. That right there, those are tickets are available. If you go to I'll post a link to our website. Those are $10 a piece, and it gets you into that. And then there are still 4 tickets, as we're doing this, available for Waverly. They're $25 a piece, and you have to go to Waverly's website to book that. But it's April 28th. It's coming up. We got people that's already bought their tickets coming from Michigan, which is 6-7 hours away.
Yeah.
Somebody coming from Texas, which I know is 10-12 hours minimum away. We got people coming from Virginia. It's going to be an amazing thing to come do a tour with all of us. And
we can't wait to see you guys. We are so flipping excited.
Yeah. So if you want to be a part of that, like I said, there's only 4 tickets left for Waverly. April 28th, go to Waverly's website and get your tickets.
Woohoo!
And then come see us for the meet and greet. It's only $10 extra. And like I said, I'll post on our Facebook page. I will post both of those links so you can be a little easier for you.
Yeah.
But we appreciate it. We're looking forward.
We are. We're looking forward to it, and you guys have a wonderful week and safe week. Hope you don't get a bunch of snow. We were supposed to have, what is it called? Snowmageddon or something. I don't think that's how it's said. And fortunately, we only got like 2 inches.
Yeah, it's the dusting of 2018.
Yeah. So anyway, it was good to see the snow, but you guys have a wonderful week, and y'all take care of each other.
All right. Love you guys. Thanks.
Love ya.
Hey, guys. Have you heard of Goldbelly? It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants across the country, anywhere, nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. Goldbelly ships Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. So, if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's goldbelly.com, promo code GIFT.